Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the VFX show. This is number 14, I think. Is that right, John?
14 it is.
Very good. I'm here with John LaBrie, and it's just the two of us today.
Everybody's bailed out.
Yeah, exactly. I guess Mike is off in lovely Paris.
Yeah, Mike sent us a distressing note where he said he'd wandered the entire length of Cannes looking for a theater to see Bond and had not somehow successfully found it.
Wow.
That's a tough life.
Yeah, so, you know, and Mike's the one that does all the research for us, so we don't really know what we're going to be talking about.
We're going to make up everything.
Exactly. And then just minutes ago, Alex sent an email saying that his wife is suddenly taken ill and he's going to be nursing her back to health. So he's out of the game, too.
I'm writing down that excuse. Wife is ill.
Hey, there's something going around. Because, you know, the last show, I didn't tell you guys this, but I was ready to lose it during the show. I had the flu or something right after that.
You were so disgusted by what we were talking about.
No, I'd caught something. I mean, literally when the last show ended, I was like just waiting for everybody to say, okay, we're done. And I just went like straight to the bathroom and I was throwing up 5 minutes later.
Well, I do the same thing, but it's not because I'm feeling ill.
I'm forced
to render opinions on the work of people who I don't really know. And sometimes people I do know and who let me know afterwards.
Sometimes even worse, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
All right, today, what are we talking about?
We're talking about Casino Royale.
That's right, Casino Royale, yeah.
Bond, James Bond.
So I have to warn you, first and foremost, that I went to see this yesterday. I was visiting a friend in Denver and snuck away for an afternoon matinee, and because I was lost in Denver, I actually managed to miss the first 10 minutes, which was probably the best 10 minutes.
Well, that is kind of a bummer, because I wanted to talk about the title sequence first.
Well, yeah, that would have been one of the reasons to go see a Bond film, right? You know, you have all
yeah.
the classic
well, and it was
bad
interesting.
Stuff with, and the Maurice... What's his name doing stuff? So how was it?
It was interesting because there's a lot of interesting things about this movie in terms of them kind of breaking the rules and doing things a little bit differently. And the title sequence was no exception. It was not not hot naked women in silhouette with flames or various other things, you know, running inside of the silhouettes. It was a completely different look. It was more, you know, Saul Bass kind of stuff, very graphic and had kind of a retro feel. It was all along the theme of card playing, and so there was, you know, these stylized hearts and clubs and diamonds and spades kind of worked into the motif, but it was all sort of mostly 2D kind of effects animation kind of stuff. I mean, it was nice. It was really nice, actually. I liked it.
Visually interesting.
Yeah, and I think it actually served the purpose that, you know, that they sort of wanted to put out there right at the outset, that this is not quite the same Bond that you've been seeing for the last however many years. And it did that, you know, it was, like I said, it felt a little bit retro, and it was certainly well done. It was CFC Framestore did the work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice.
Huh. But no women.
I don't think there was any.
Well, and more card playing. And, you know, I have to say that I'm actually surprised to hear that there was actually more card playing in this film in the beginning, because there's so much of it in the middle of the film.
There is a lot. But
quite a bit of card playing.
What okay. it's about. But
So there's an attempt here by the filmmakers to make this kind of retro Bond film. And I have to say that as an idea, as an approach, that really appeals to me. I read the books when I was a kid, you know, I didn't, you know, obsess over them, but I thought they were fun to read, and, you know, the movies were always kind of goofy fun with, you know, kind of, you know, cutting edge stuff going on. I have to say that this one felt a little flat to me, even though I like Daniel Craig. I thought he made a pretty good Bond. I like the fact that it went to a more character-driven story, et cetera, et cetera, but it was a little slow. It was a little slow to me.
It was a little slow. I actually liked it quite a bit, but yeah, I would say that it was a little slow and drawn out in places, and kind of stupid in a couple of places. We'll probably get to that as well. But you know, I got to give him, first of all, I got to give him a lot of credit for being willing to not stick with a formula that's certainly been successful. And it's not like, you know, that last the last installment was at all problematic. I mean, it was, I think it was the biggest of all of them so far.
Yeah, that's my understanding too. Yeah, that was what, the Die Another Day, Halle Berry, that?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was a huge hit. But, I like I said, I got to give them credit for being willing to say, you know what, it's, you don't want to keep making them until they turn to crap. You know, you kind of want to reinvent yourself when it's still time to do it and be fresh on it. So
I agree. I think that, you know, the fact that, you know, it was kind of grittier and more hard-edged, all that kind of works. I hope they use Dan Craig again. I thought he was good in the role. I liked him before he was Bond. I think he's, I mean, I liked him in Layer Cake. I liked him in other stuff. So that stuff all worked for me. But I would argue that one of the results of their, you know, grittier, more down-to-earth approach is that there's a lot less effects work in this for what you'd call your typical Bond film.
Yeah, well, that may make our job harder, is trying to talk about it, but I don't know that necessarily hurt the film any.
No. I agree. It doesn't hurt the film at all. It's hurting this podcast. It's hurting this podcast already. It's hurting this podcast right now.
Oh, we'll have plenty to talk about. You know, like we said, we'll just make something up.
Yeah, okay.
So for you, what didn't work was what, the pacing of it, or the plot in general, or?
Well, okay. I don't want to belabor the point, but yeah, I think it was the pacing, and I think that the pacing was a little bit uneven. I guess I have to admit, without sounding like I have too much of a sweet tooth, that, you know, I kind of expected some bigger, you know, set pieces, some bigger action set pieces, and I thought the ones that they chose, you know, there's an opening sequence where they chase guys all over on cranes, and then there's a closing sequence with the destruction of a house in Venice, and then there's a chase sequence at an airport. They were kind of lackluster to me, and
yeah, they definitely weren't quite as big, but they also weren't quite as outrageous.
That's right. Yeah, they're very sort of gritty and real. Maybe somehow I've disassociated gritty and real from Bond film. I need to reconnect.
I know what you're saying, and I kind of went back and forth a little bit thinking about it too, because, you know, at some level you do miss the really big stuff, and you miss the I miss Q and some of the gadgets and things like that, but, you know, I can also understand. I really look at this movie as, you know, it was effectively a character study in what does it take to make a person, you know, like the Bond we know, that sort of you know, lives on the edge and doesn't really care if he lives or die, and maybe doesn't have the most healthiest outlook on relationships. You know, I mean that's probably reading a little bit too much or giving it a little bit too much credit, but I think that's kind of the point of what they did.
I don't think you give it too much credit. I don't want to bash it too much. I appreciate what they were trying to do. I think they mostly pulled it off. You know, I mean, it's just, there was something, I don't know, when they rolled the final credits, I was just a little unsatisfied.
Yeah, well, I think it also just kind of petered out at the end. You didn't really, felt a little.
Can we say that it was actually kind of a bad ending?
Yeah, I thought it was too. Yeah. I mean, it definitely didn't end with a bang, and sort of ended. It kind of, is it going to end now? Is it going to end now? You know, it really sort of kind of limped toward the end in some ways, and it felt like it had sort of several places where it was trying to end. And it's true. I mean, I'm very curious to see, now that they sort of set up this version of Bond, what the next one is going to be like. I mean, you know, are they going to now feel, okay, we've set the tone, you know, are they going to have to stay with that? Are they going to do it a little bit bigger now that they can kind of have more fun with them? And
right.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Are they going to throw some more gadgets at him? Are they going to?
Yeah.
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 I mean, they've now successfully explained away his cavalier attitude towards women. On women turn up dead.
And I almost wonder if that, like I said, that may be the primary thing that they wanted to sort of establish, is why he is such a cat at some point. I don't know.
Could be.
But, yeah, okay, I miss the gadgets, too.
talking about the effects, I mean, the one thing that sort of stuck out to me on the downside was that there were some wobbly comps in this film.
Yeah, there were a couple. I mean, I don't think there were that many comps, so.
No, there weren't that. There weren't a lot.
You know, the which one sort of jumped out at you?
There's a couple of. Okay, so. They're both. There's one near the end of the film where he's on this boat, open sunlight. I think it's like Venice in the background behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And either the lighting on him is a little bit odd, or the matching in the background is a little bit strange.
Right.
And there's another one that's earlier in the film. It's also him against an outside skyline, but I can't actually recall the scene.
Yeah, I don't. I don't remember one sort of in the middle that jumped out at me quite as much. The one that. There was a couple that jumped out at me were in the very beginning scene, the chase sequence when they're up on top of the crane. I think a lot of that was real, and they were just sort of you could tell by the framing they weren't really up that high, and they were on a low stage.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of them where wider shots, and in particular the one that really jumped out at me is Bond's on. This cable hanging down from the crane. There's a whole big load there that he releases, and it kind of elevates him up to the top of the crane. And there was a pretty stinky one in the midst of that. That was the one that really jumped out at me.
I actually didn't pick it. So
yeah, that might have actually been before you got in there. If you
no,
missed
no,
the
I
first
saw that.
Okay, yeah. So that one, and then it was on the train where he first meets Vesper Lynn, I guess the name. And there's
Comp?
Yeah, the classic window comp.
Yeah.
And it wasn't egregiously bad, but mostly because the for 99% of the shots they were leaning back and not actually crossing over where the blue screen probably was.
Right.
So the reason it didn't quite look right to me, other than it was so obviously the kind of thing that would be a comp, I just knew it was a comp from the second the shot started.
I think that's how I felt about it. I remember specifically the shot and looking at it and thinking, okay, they did a window comp and
yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, the lighting didn't. It felt like nothing out of the window was contributing anything to the lighting. And granted, it was kind of dim outside, but it felt like it was sort of not quite,
right.
You know, settled in that way. And I think there was a couple times where she leaned forward and the edges didn't really crawl, but it, you know, felt like there was no translucency to her hair at all. You know, you kind of take the easy route and say, all right, I'm not even going to bother trying to keep any hair off of it. So, I mean, and sometimes that's the right answer in terms of better that than some, you know, kind of fuzzy edge or something that glows a little bit. But
yeah.
It's kind of cheating, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So.
Anything else? Anything else that was you thought was great or funky?
Well, I really thought the building collapsing at the end, which was done with miniatures, was great. I mean, that was so the right decision to make for something like that.
Right.
You know, it's again, it's just like Lord of the Rings, and you know, some of the stuff that it seems to be like Weta for a while there was carrying the torch of miniatures are still the way to go for a lot of this.
Right.
This just proves it out once again.
Yeah, it looks good. I the only problems I have with that sequence were that they kind of oversold it. They kept cutting back to the building going in and going again. It was a classic case of like, you know, you shoot this gun an hour ago and the bullet's still traveling.
we paid for this miniature. We're going to show it to you several times.
Exactly. So there was a bit of that. But overall, yeah I thought it looked good, you know.
Yeah, and it didn't bother me. I mean, I liked seeing it. I mean, maybe because I was trying to look for, you know, where the flaws were. But I was getting, you know, and of course that had to be a comp at some level. They had to put the miniature into, you know, the rest of the scene. And I don't remember anything in there jumping out at me as being at all out of place. So I kind of wish I knew sort of which facilities had done it. I guess it was all done in London. It was, NPC, Cinesite, and Peerless, I guess, all worked on it.
Right.
But I don't know who did what. There's surprisingly little info on the web. About any of the visual effects.
They're pretty low profile with this one, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, you know, it may be one of those things where they are actually playing up the sense of, you know, we're getting away from the, you know, the CGI, like it's a curse word these days.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe the publicity machine has just sort of said, yeah, we're not going to talk about, you know, the digital side of things very much.
Right. I'm actually surprised that some of that work wasn't maybe broken away for Sony, because Sony...
Yeah, it's a Sony movie now.
Driver, this, right? It's a Sony film.
And yeah,
maybe the only Sony film. I think I saw an article last week that said that this may be the only one that Sony's actually involved in.
Oh, in terms of the Bonds? Well, yeah, it was MGM before, right?
So it was MGM, and then MGM, you know, acquired the rights through some Ledger Domain, where they're dancing around with MGM. But then apparently there's some plan afoot for, you know, the Broccoli family to recover control over the project. Not that they're unhappy with Sony or anything, but just that, you know, they have other plans. So
yeah. Well, Sony certainly got their product placement in there, at least.
That's right, that Sony Ericsson phone. If I had to see phone that thing
was,
one more time.
All of it, there was just like three or four different Sony Ericsson phones, and there was, you know, the Vio.
Right, of course.
Stuff like that.
I guess I'm you know what, I'm immune to them anymore.
Yeah, for some reason I noticed one of them early on, and then there was actually quite a lot of product placement in there. Did you catch the... So Virgin Atlantic had...
I saw the Virgin plane landing.
Did you actually catch that Richard Branson had a little cameo in there?
No, where was he?
In the airport. I'm almost positive it was him. And in the airport where they're going through it, and he's going through security or something like that. Branson is like getting a pat down by TSA or whatever the security.
That's funny. Security. We were talking about a film earlier this year had Branson did a cameo. Superman, right?
I don't know. I never saw that one.
Huh?
Nor did I listen to your podcast on it, but...
My podcast. It's ours. Our podcast. Like, you mean you don't slavishly listen to the ones that you don't participate in?
No.
Man,
I mean, I would have had I seen the movie, but I didn't see the movie. So
I'm disturbed. I'm pretty sure that he actually did it.
He did a
cameo as in the right hand flyer seat. Yeah. So Branson's now a wannabe star.
Yep. He probably paid good money to.
He should just go ahead and fund a film.
Get his stuff in there
and cast himself.
Probably.
Okay, so the chase sequence at the airport, there wasn't really a lot of practical work, really.
Yeah, you mean
the guy's gonna blow up a plane, right?
Yeah, I don't know what, I didn't find anything that specifically called out visual effects work.
I kept
there.
Thinking that they were gonna do a CG plane, maybe, because, you know, it was an unusual, but it just like kind of a dolled up 747 with an extended...
Yeah. Yeah, there was nothing in there that I could point to. I mean, I'm sure there was the usual kind of wire removal, rig removal stuff for some of the scenes where he's hanging off the top, and you know, I mean that's a typical sort of
right.
You can kind of count on that being in dozens or hundreds of shots now.
yeah, exactly.
I think that's exactly the way to do it. A lot of times is, you know, you feel like you're in there. It feels very real.
Yep,
and it was good. So yeah, I did read there was a little bit of miniature work in the opening sequence, that whole chase, the running chase thing with the there was a scene where he ran a bulldozer into the wall and a lot of debris flew around.
Yeah,
I guess some of that was a miniature.
Right.
I really love that the actual chase part of it. What do you call that style of?
What do you call that? Crazy thing that French guys do between buildings.
Parkour, I think it is, parkour, or something like that. Yeah, free running.
Right.
I'm looking at my notes here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a very well imagined sequence. There's a couple of interesting bits, like Dan Craig running up a crane and get altitude and stuff like that.
Yeah, the actor that was in there is actually one of the founders of that free running style.
He had to be. He was pretty.
It was amazing. I mean, that just blows me away. I mean,
there's a couple of parts there that they were approaching the sort of the choreography of like a Jackie Chan film. You know, mm-hmm. diving through windows and doing other kinds of stuff. There was some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. So that was nice. What else was there?
Not much. That's the theme. The theme was that we went to see a big Bond film with lots of splashy over-the-top visual effects, but they didn't show up because they were trying to do something gritty and real and, you know, kind of pulled it off.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like most of the other big stuff, like even the car crash, the Aston Martin crashing.
Yep.
I think that was all...
Looked like they tumbled in practice. Aston Martin or something like
that. Yeah, I read somewhere they actually, they broke the record for the number of flips a car does in the...
I love that. Yeah.
But yeah, they had some kind of a, you know, an air cannon that was built into the car designed to catapult it up and over.
Yep.
So, but yeah, I think that, again, unless there was just some sort of rig removal or something there, I don't think there was anything effects-wise in there.
Let's just flip a car.
Yeah.
We know how to do it. I mean, the guys that are doing that practical work on, you know, Bond films have been doing it for what? Most of them are probably like 10, 20, 30 films into it.
Yep.
You know, so they'd know better than anybody how to do all that stuff.
Yeah. I do know the one sort of interesting thing about this is apparently CFC, in addition to doing the... doing the title sequence, apparently also did the DI for the film.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently this is the first sort of major film to be done to the DCI initiative, which I guess we could talk about that just a little bit. That's I don't know how familiar you are with that, but that's the digital cinema. Digital cinema initiative. Yes. So yeah. I guess when I called it the DCI initiative, I was doubling my initiatives or something. Anyway, yeah, DCI is sort of this collection of I guess it was the studios got together more or less, right?
Yeah, you're going to be more up in this than me. I haven't been paying attention to it.
Effectively, you know, somebody realized that this whole digital intermediate or digital projection in theaters, somebody ought to try and make some standards up for it. So there was a body of people that got together. I think all the studios put some people in, and, you know, some techie guys from around the globe kind of got together and sort of defined what, you know, what format these things would be in, how the data would be compressed. They're using some sort of XYZ color space for everything. You know, just kind of trying to lay out all the details of not only something standard, so that when you go to any theater that's standard compliant, you know that this stuff
will play.
Your image
is going to look a certain way.
Yeah.
Black's going to be at a certain level. Whites are going to be a certain level. The gamma of the projector is going to be, it's going to respond a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, I guess it's sort of the a visual equivalent to, some of the audio stuff that's out there.
The THX.
Yeah.
We'll say a branded name.
Like, yeah, something
and
like that.
Those guys have drifted over into, like, cinema certification as well. Like, you know, put Lamberts on the screen and that kind of thing. So,
yeah. And I think the DCI may just only specify the format for the data itself, the digital delivery of the data.
Does that mean that DCI is not going to be the 12th logo on the front of my new receiver? Or
yeah, I think because it's not actually backed by a company that has a specific company that has an agenda to,
or is going to make a licensing fee from it.
Yes, so, exactly. Yeah. I think it's one. Believe it or not, it's people working together to just come up with something that's sensible
to try and drive digital cinema into theaters.
Yeah.
Right. Which has been struggling.
It has. I think I read somewhere.
It's too much money to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's expensive. I mean, it is expensive.
$100,000 projector instead of a $10,000 projector.
Yep. And, you know, you got to understand the theater owner's concern about spending that kind of money with how fast stuff's changing. You know, it's.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to spend $100,000 on a 2K projector, and then in 3 years from now, everybody's going to say, well, the standard's 4K.
Right.
You got to do it all again. So, I mean, I can totally understand theater owners just not being willing to do it. I mean, you'll get some of the big ones in the big cities that probably see enough revenue from their screens to do it. But, you know, how are you going to... I still think the studios are going to have to just step up and somehow fund that for if they want it to be widely available.
Yeah, you got to wonder if they're going to do it. I mean, there's a couple of reasons for a cinema, I think, to convert to digital. And one is that you can start to do... You can do a lot more niche content, right? You don't have to like lace up a new flick,
right?
If you want to show something at midnight, or show five different films on the same screen during the day. So that's kind of interesting. But there's a question there about, you know, how much does that fragment the market, and you know, does that get you more people in seats, or do you just get fringe guys who are, not going to pay a lot of money for the per screening, et cetera,
right?
The other thing, of course, is I think we talked a little bit about this last week. Maybe not 3D.
Yeah, right.
You know, the idea that maybe the revival of the movie going experience in a big cinema will be the revival of 3D, and we've got major filmmakers out there. Cameron leaps to mind for obvious reasons. Who are saying I'm going to do 3D films, and that requires digital projection. Essentially, you got
it. Right, but it also sort of implies again that if you buy one now. Is it going to be?
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to just sort of,
scoot all
it?
You have to do buy another one?
Yeah, right. Get it 6 inches over and have the other one next to it, or do you have to buy
that
a whole new
work?
System?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So, you can understand why a lot of people are hanging back and saying, I'm going to wait and see how that all lays out before I invest.
I think I read somewhere that it was showing digitally in like 200 screens, the Casino Royale was.
Really? Okay.
Which I guess is not a bad number. I don't know how many screens this opened on, but.
It's not terrible.
2,000-3,000, I would imagine. So,
2,000-3,000, and it didn't open at number one.
Yeah,
it was beat by Happy Feet.
Happy Feet.
Animation is not dead, apparently.
and even talking animals are not dead, which is I wish they were. But
you'd kill them yourself.
I would.
Right.
Somebody needs to make a movie about that.
Yes, exactly. But, so have we flogged this particular animal?
Yeah, I think so. That's
good. A nice brisk short.
Yep. That's good.
VFX show.
Yep.
And do we have any idea what we're doing next?
I had some idea. I sent out mail on it.
You did?
What did we say? Yeah.
I don't know.
There's something big. Is it the fountain that's opening up this weekend?
Oh, I think it is. It might be the fountain.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Aronofsky.
Yeah. Yeah,
this guy's kind of twisted. You might turn up with something good.
Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. And then there's some interesting stuff effects-wise, too. Apparently, they kind of went a little old school on some of that, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, some...
old school practical or old school...
Yeah, well, there's a lot of kind of...
Amiga.
Hopefully not Amiga effects. Although it is, you know, sort of a moving through time kind of movie in some way. So no, I guess we should talk about it during the next show. But apparently, I'll just talk about what I think it is, and I'll be proven completely wrong whenever I actually see it. But I think there's a lot of stuff towards the end, sort of the these somewhat surreal scenes where instead of doing CG on it, they did this microscopic photography of strange things floating in liquids or something like that.
Really? So, oh, I thought you were going to say something like, you know, 2001 sort of slit screen.
Well, I get the impression that the end is somewhat 2001-ish enigmatic kind of thing. So.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. So yeah, I guess that'll be our next one.
We think.
Unless
somebody tells us differently.
Yep.
But if nobody else shows up,
then
they can't tell us what we're
going to
do.
You and I are talking about what we care to talk about.
Exactly.
But now it's apparently we're if you get to this podcast through iTunes, we may actually have a good chunk of new listeners listening to this one since
up
we,
on the front page
on the front page of iTunes.
Ain't we something?
Which is exciting for us.
Yeah.
So, but all right, I think that's about it. Just to plug Mike and Alex a little bit. Alex is with Pixel Core. thepixeldecor.com or something like that.
Yep.
That's as good a plug as it's going to get. I'm not going to bother looking up what the actual URL is. And Mike Seymour, effectsguide.com.
Yes.
And if you want to poke over to my... Actually, people should just... I'm telling people, go to my digitalcompositing.com website. Don't have to do anything other than just go over there, but I'm just curious. I've got some little logging things that tell how many people popped over. So everybody this week, make a conscious effort to go over there just because I'm completely curious about how many people will actually do it.
Wow.
And there's nothing up really on that page, but there's some nice pictures of Iceland there.
Oh, you're really overselling it. There's nothing on my page, but you should just go check it out.
Go see some pictures of Iceland. There's some pretty pictures there. All right. Jeez. Enough of that.
Yeah.
We've devolved into a meaningless chit-chat now.
Okay.
So...
In the meantime...
Keep it real.